Welcome to Happily Ever After is just the beginning. Keeping your relationship not just together, but happy, and we mean truly happy, is part art and part science. You've come to the right place. Here's your host, Leslie Dorries.
Many people think of infidelity as the worst thing that can happen in a marriage. And having worked with many couples who've experienced this, I do agree that it qualifies as catastrophic. It is betrayal at its core. But the sense of betrayal isn't necessarily what you might think. The source of betrayal quite often is the lies. And this is why emotional affairs, financial infidelity, and other forms of dishonesty frequently have the same impact on a marriage as a physical affair. Relationships are built on trust. And trust is a function of honesty. And if I don't know the truth, how can I trust you? And that's really what the vow to honor in the marriage vows means. Now, not all lies we tell each other are covers for affairs, but they all are covering up something. Otherwise, they're not necessary. So to talk about why we lie to those we love, I'm joined by Dr. Marissa Cohen. She's an associate professor of psychology, a relationship researcher, and the author of From First Kiss to Forever. So, Dr. Cohen, Marissa, thank you so much for joining me on the show to talk about what's kind of a touchy subject for a lot of people.
Thank you so much for having me.
So, you tackled the subject of lies in an article you wrote, Keeping Secrets, the Use of Deception in Romantic Relationships, which is on the psychologytoday.com website. And, you know, these are pretty strong words, secrets, deception, lies. Is that what's really happening in relationships?
Well, I think it's really important to discuss what deception is and what types of lies are typically told. And first, just to kind of unpack this a little bit, deception is when you cause someone to believe something that's untrue. And most people probably think of this catastrophic idea of what deception is, you know, lying about infidelity, but it isn't always necessarily that extreme. We have different types of lies that might come into play with relationships, and it's also not necessarily the type of lie, but the content of the lie itself that can potentially be damaging to a relationship. So, for example, you have things like lies of commission, lies of omission, and white lies.
Ah, yes, the infamous white lies.
Yes.
So, what are the difference of those kind of lies? I mean, because like you said, sometimes these lies, they're not covering up something as awful or as relationship challenging as an affair, but the lies still have impact. So what are these different kinds of lies?
Sure. So like I just mentioned before, when people hear lying, they tend to think of something extremely negative and earth-shattering, such as lying about an affair, but it's not necessarily always that severe. Please note, of course, that I'm not condoning lying in relationships, but it's important to really tease apart these types of lies that are told and the reasons why we tell them. So, for example, lies of commission is any time that you add something false. So you tell someone something that is not true.
Lies I was at work until 7 o'clock when I actually wasn't.
Exactly. And a lie of omission is just failing to share information. So you're not forthcoming. Essentially, you're withholding the entire truth.
Okay. And how does that differ from a white lie?
A white lie tends to be something that's a little smaller in scale and it's used to spare someone's feelings. So, we tend to lie on a day-to-day basis. Sometimes we're not even aware of the fact that we're lying to people because in a way it kind of is a social lubricant. So if you think about telling someone something like you love their work or their performance, or if someone asks you, how do my cookies taste, and they're really awful, but you say, oh, they taste delicious, that might be a small white lie because it's not necessarily anything that's going to hurt the other person. We say it in order to spare their feelings.
Okay. I see that. Do white lies cause as much damage as, say, the other two kinds of lies, either lying directly to your face about something important or just not sharing all of the information?
It really depends what the content of the lie is, as well as how often the lies are told. And, you know, what decisions are we making based upon these lies? So, for example, if we go back to that whole cookie scenario, you might think, okay, no big deal. We just told a person we enjoyed their cookies, even though they didn't taste that great. But what if this person, I know this is going to sound kind of extreme, but just go with me down this path for a second. What if a person was planning on quitting their full-time job to become a baker and now just had that final validation that she needed, like, okay, I'm good at this. Let's go. Like, let's make this my full-time career. So you don't know necessarily what the other person's actions are going to be in response to your white lie. The intention of a white lie isn't necessarily that bad. But again, we can't control how another person reacts to what we say.
Well, and so what happens when somebody finds out that that's a lie? That, no, my cookies were really awful, or you know, whatever else the white lie might be.
I mean, on the one hand, you can have a person react pretty poorly and say, you know, I trusted you as a friend. I expect to hear the truth from you, because if I'm not going to get the truth from you, who am I going to get it from? Mm-hmm. Or on the other hand, the person might just be thankful, saying, okay, you care so much about me, you don't want to hurt my feelings. And that's a response to something that's so personal that we really can't predict how another person's going to react, which is why open and honest communication with our friends, our partners, our family members are so important. Do you want the person to be brutally honest and always tell you the truth, or do you want the person to kind of pick and choose to protect your feelings?
Yeah, and I'm so glad you mentioned the brutally honest, because I happen to be, listeners of the show know that I happen to be a proponent of something called radical honesty, which is being honest all the time. And brutal honesty isn't necessary. I can be gently honest with somebody. And I think that's one of the things that people get caught up in. One, either they really aren't really paying much attention to the impact of what they're saying, and they are somewhat brutal as opposed to kind of picking and choosing their words, or recognizing that I can actually share this information in a very gentle and loving way. So it's like, maybe it's just I don't like chocolate chip cookies, but these cookies just aren't doing it for me. You know?
Right.
You know, at least, and something I could actually honestly say that about peanut butter cookies. Nobody's ever going to want my take on peanut butter cookies because I just can't stand them. But it is, how do we be more gently honest and not, you know, because we can do that. And I think it does take a little bit more thought, which I think is also part of the reason sometimes why we tell the white lies or the lies of omission. And by the way, lies of omission are not the same thing as I just forgot about it.
Right.
You know, but it is more along the lines of, oh, yes, here's this other thing I forgot to tell you that actually is important for you to know.
Right, and I love what you were just saying about the radical honesty. It's all about, can I communicate a message to you that's meaningful, but also share it in a gentle way?
Which, by the way, people can learn how to do. This is a skill that people can learn. But in the article, you going back to specifically romantic relationships, you mentioned two types of agreements that couples make with each other. One you call obligatory rules, and then the other one you call discretionary rules. And what's the difference, and how does this apply to honesty?
Well, so the article that I chose to review in the article that I wrote was a great piece, and it was actually written by Rogan Sack and Sillars in 2014. And they basically, in their article, show that while people value honesty in their relationships, situational variables may also lead people to think about a careful balance between being completely open and using discretion in what's shared with their partner. And they found that there is a difference between obligatory rules and discretionary rules. And the obligatory rules prescribe disclosure, and discretionary rules tend to be a little bit more flexible. So obligatory rules more often explain behavior in clear terms, such as we won't check each other's text messages, or we won't share each other's email passwords and go into each other's email. Discretionary rules, on the other hand, they require a little bit more judgment because they tend to be a little bit more flexible in nature. So this is more similar to a lie of omission, such as not sharing information that can potentially cause conflict in the relationship. And what's interesting is that both types of these rules can come into play in the very same scenario. So
interesting.
Yeah, if you say, tell me about how many previous relationships you had, that would be an obligatory rule. Like, I want to know how many relationships you've been in prior to me. But you might incorporate a discretionary rule, which is you don't share how strong your feelings were about your last partner because you don't want to hurt your current partner's feelings.
Interesting. I could see how, though, and I guess part of that is then what happens if I ask you, so how involved were you with this other person? I mean, and there are some things that one would know about. So saying, well, if I was engaged to this person or if I lived with this person for 3 years, we might be able to gauge something like that. And I guess a lot of it depends on, why does somebody want to know this information?
Right. What do they stand to gain by getting that information? And if you think about it, the two kind of rules can almost be paradoxical in a way, because essentially it's saying, tell me everything, but don't tell me if it will hurt me, which is sometimes hard to determine.
Well, yes, and this is one of the things. And I once wrote an article, it was several years ago, and the title of the article was How to Get Your Partner to Lie to You. And one of the ways was react poorly when they tell you the truth. And so I think that kind of comes into the discretionary, because it's sort of like, what is the reason that somebody is wanting this information? And then how is it going to, like you said, either impact them or impact me? Because sometimes that can really throw a real wrench into a relationship.
Oh, completely. And that can just make some topics off limits in the relationship, which gets in the way of complete open honesty and good communication. So, you know, what you were saying is if you know that the partner reacts very poorly every time you bring up your parents, because there might be some issues with in-laws, then you just won't bring up conversations you have with your parents, even if it could potentially impact your partner, just knowing, well, every time I bring this up, we get into a huge blowout fight. So in order to completely avoid getting into conflict with you, I'm just going to hold this information in.
I think that is such an incredibly important point, because I do think, and that kind of goes to my thing about reacting poorly when your partner tells you the truth, because then they will avoid it. And then that just puts distance between you, because we can't talk about this topic over here, whether it's the in-laws or whether it's past relationships or whether it's whatever it is. It has now become impossible for us to talk about this because it just evolved into this really bad situation. And that's my way of thinking, is that's kind of like termites eating at the foundation of your relationship, is that, well, we can't talk about this over here.
Oh, exactly. And it's also, it's putting walls up essentially, which, you know, both partners may not even realize that these walls are being put up. So if you're putting up a wall saying, okay, this is an area that we're not going to touch because I know how my husband or my wife is going to react, you stifle, you know, you basically stop yourself before bringing it up to your partner, and your partner doesn't have any clue.
Right, and that's definitely what we're calling a lie of omission. I'm not sharing information with you that you need to have.
Right.
And somehow this just reminds me of a story that my husband told years ago when the company that he worked for went to automatic deposit for checks, and several of the hourly workers were really upset because they hadn't been sharing how much overtime they were getting. So they were keeping really important information from their partners, and it's like it really blew my husband's mind because he and I didn't keep that kind of stuff from each other, and so it really kind of blew his mind that somebody would. And it was like, yeah, those are
right. And finances is one of those areas that's a potentially hot button issue in relationships.
Absolutely. This is Happily Ever After is just the beginning on webtalkradio.net. I'm Leslie Dorries, and my guest today is Associate Professor of Psychology, Relationship Researcher, and author, Dr. Marissa Cohen. And we're talking about the importance of honesty in romantic relationships. And if this is an issue in yours, it doesn't mean anyone is a bad person. It just means some necessary parameters are missing. And to learn about how to create a space for real honesty in your marriage, I invite you to contact me and arrange a complimentary Create Your Happily Ever After strategy session. You can reach me at Leslie, L-E-S-L-I, at foundationscoachingnc.com. That's F-O-U-N-D-A-T-I-O-N-S, coaching, N as in Nancy, C as in Charlie.com. Or you can give me a call at area code 919-924-0463. And I want to get back to this conversation about honesty, white lies, lies of omission, all this stuff we're talking about. And in the article, we were talking about one of the reasons why couples lie to each other, but you mentioned three: reciprocity, avoidance of punishment, which is kind of the one we were just talking about, and attachment needs. So what are each of these, and we kind of, and what prompts them?
So there was a really great study that was done in 2001, which I talk about in that article, and it was done by a researcher by the name of Cole. And the reason why I like this study is because while so many people are looking at how lying can be detrimental to a relationship, this study really dug into, well, what are the reasons why we lie? What causes lying to occur in the first place? So in this particular research study, Cole was looking at 128 couples and found that, as you mentioned, there are three explanations for why intimate partners lie to one another. And regarding reciprocity, if a person suspects that his or her partner is lying or being dishonest, he or she may act in kind, specifically as a way of retaliation. So if you lie to me, I'm going to lie to you.
Never a good idea.
No, exactly. A tit-for-tat scenario, and, you know, it's problematic, extremely problematic.
Yeah, let's just escalate the whole thing.
I mean, when I think of that, I know this is a little bit off the topic of lying, but I start to think about, you know, John Gottman's research with, you know, people in attached relationships. And when you have this tit-for-tat strategy, essentially, or you have this emotional bank account, and you're constantly looking at, well, what am I putting into the relationship? What is the other person putting into the relationship? And you're more focused on keeping track than on building the relationship itself and growth. And I think it's more important to just give the relationship your all, treat your partner how you want to be treated, and you hope that your partner is going to do that in kind rather than monitoring everything so extremely closely.
Yeah, that's just exhausting. And so then we were also talking about the avoidance of punishment, which is kind of what we were talking about before the break, about I'm not going to tell you something because the cost is so high.
Right. Essentially, if a person just opts out of sharing information, if they feel their partner, if they're going to get an aggressive reaction from their partner. So I won't even bring this topic up to you because I know that it's always met with a huge fight. And again, that's that building up of walls, you know, kind of omitting certain topics of conversation, which can really stifle the relationship and the growth.
So the last one in attachment theory, the whole concept of attachment has become really popular is not the right word, but very front and center these days for a lot of explanations about what goes on in relationships. So what are attachment needs and how do they show up in terms of honesty in relationships?
So the holy grail is pretty much a secure attachment style. And that really helps with relationship satisfaction and relationship longevity. But when we have insecure attachment styles, there's two that we tend to talk about. And that's insecure avoidant and insecure anxious. And for the first one, with attachment avoidance, people tend to tell lies or withhold information, and it's used in a way to basically keep partners at a comfortable distance. So I'm not going to let you in on all the information. I really don't want to let you into my life completely. As far as those who are anxiously attached, the use of deception can be used to bring this person, the person that's anxiously attached, closer to his or her partner in the short term, but essentially may have an unintended effect of creating a rift between them in the long term. So maybe I'm going to lie to you, tell you everything that you want to hear so we can create this instant close bond, and you care about me, you love me now, but I'm not telling you the truth. So while I was able to create this incredibly close bond now, down the road, as you start to find out that I haven't been forthcoming, it's going to have the unintended opposite effect.
So that's interesting because I can see how both those insecure attachment styles are really, I'm not really being honest about who I am and what I feel. So in the anxious, it's like I'm sort of putting on this persona, so I am the person you want me to be because I want to be close to you, but then the longer we go, I can't keep that up. Or the avoidant person, I'm just not going to really share with you who I am.
Exactly. It's kind of like the difference between putting walls up versus, just like you said, putting on a show for another person. And eventually, all lies have a way of surfacing. Either you can't keep up the charade any longer and you admit it to yourself, or just environmental circumstances let the person in on the fact that they've been lied to.
Well, yeah, I mean, because there's a pretty... If I'm telling you the truth, then I only have to keep. There's only one story.
But exactly.
If I'm creating lies, then I have to remember what I said, or if it's involving somebody else, that you might find out from this other person that no, she actually wasn't at my house that day. It's like, oh.
Right, right.
And so, I mean, and I think that's part of it. So what is it that couples can do to, and I guess maybe it's more individuals, but how do we change this behavior? Because, you know, this all goes into, if I'm honest about who I am and what I need and how I feel, it's like, oh, my gosh, I've just given you the playbook on how to hurt me.
Right, right. I could see that. I feel like to protect the relationship and the trust between two people, it's really better to refrain from taking a creative license when it comes to sharing information with your partner. You have to really have a discussion at the beginning of the relationship. And of course, you know, if this is a new relationship, this might not be a first date topic that you want to bring up, but it's
definitely not.
It's at the point where the relationship starts to become serious, you're truly attached to one another, and you're starting to create this intimate bond. And in advance of acquiring any potential problematic information, you should have a discussion about what to do if a situation ever arises. So you may be surprised to find out that your partner is like, I just want you to tell me everything. You know, don't censor it. Tell me everything, even if you think it's going to hurt me, because that's important to me, because I want to know that I can come to you to get the complete truth. Or you might find out your partner says, you know, it depends what the situation is. If you think it's something that, you know, might potentially hurt me, there's no need to tell me everything. But here's certain ground rules that we should have. Discuss what types of information is important to share.
What a concept, actually talking to each other about stuff like this.
I mean, if you think about it, there's kind of like a sliding scale. Rarely in relationships are things just so black and white. You know, even when I talk to people about infidelity, let's say, and this is a topic that can lead to potential a lot of deception in a relationship. You know, what is infidelity? What is cheating? It's not quite so black and white. Like when you have your own viewpoint, but you don't necessarily know how your partner thinks about it until you ask. So opening up a conversation is so, so important to make sure that both of you are on the same page.
I mean, and that is so true, because I've had so many people where one partner, and this is more about emotional affairs, where they believe that their partner has stepped out of bounds, and the other person is like, well, I didn't sleep with the person. There was no physical stuff. And it's like, okay, yeah, you're missing the point. But again, that goes to not having had a conversation about what that means.
Exactly. I mean, I have a colleague who, she was instrumental in coming up with something known as the Perceptions of Dating Infidelity Scale. And it looks at, you know, which behaviors do you believe constitute cheating? And it can range from, you know, having a sexual relationship with another person to just buying presents for another person or going out to dinner with someone of the opposite sex. So people have their own viewpoints of what constitutes cheating, what makes a person honest, what constitutes deception. So these discussions need to be had. They're not necessarily always the easiest discussions to have, but they're important.
Well, because, and again, that expectation, I call expectations the gremlins of relationships, because we have them in our head and we kind of function as if everybody else has the same expectations. But if we haven't actually sat down with our partner and said, hey, this is how my brain works, this is my belief system, these are the expectations that, oh, by the way, I'm going to be holding you to.
Right.
Know about them. Because that's one of the things I tell people. I say, you have these expectations, but if your partner hasn't specifically and openly agreed to them, then you're running around blind, and you're probably going to create some challenges because your partner either, one, isn't going to agree to those expectations, and you need to know that up front to decide whether or not it's a realistic expectation, or two, they at least know what they're being judged against.
Right, and of course, you can renegotiate as the relationship goes on. You know, it's not necessarily rules that are set in stone, but it's important to at least open up the conversation, because once a person feels like some sort of rule has been violated, especially when it comes to things like trust and honesty, if a person feels like that's been violated, it's really, really hard to come back from that. Not impossible, but really, really challenging.
Well, and I agree, and that is one of the biggest challenges when there has been some kind of betrayal, is how do we rebuild trust? And it is possible to do, but it's like anything else. It's a lot easier not to lose it in the first place.
Right, exactly.
But again, we have to talk to each other. It's like, what a novel concept.
And it has to be also a face-to-face conversation, because as we're now increasingly living in this digital world, and a lot of people, and you know, I can understand it. You know, I want to get all my thoughts down on paper in an email. And if you feel like that's better for you initially, that's great. But then follow it up with a person-to-person, face-to-face conversation, because
our intonation, our body language, that doesn't come across in an email, in a text conversation. And it's really just about kind of reading the other person as well as listening to what they're saying. So you do need to create that intimate space of being together when having these important discussions.
And I could not agree more. And a lot of people, you know, they like the distance of email or text, but so much gets lost. And
exactly.
You know, and again, it's also learning that we have different communication styles, which is critical, and creating the space, like you said, for being able to have this conversation. And what people need to understand, it's not a one-time conversation. It's
right.
You know, because I might think that something is okay, and then I realize later it's not, and I've got to be able to go back to my partner and say, you know, hey, remember when I said that this was okay? Well, I'm really struggling with it now. Can we talk about it?
Exactly, because as we learn to understand our partners, we're also learning to understand ourselves better. So, you know, what might have been okay for us at one point might not be okay as we start to think about it more or as we change.
Right, which that's the other thing, is that we don't stay static, hopefully. So,
right.
Can you, which is what people seem to think. But can you tell people where they can get some more information about you and more information about your book?
Sure. So my personal website is www.marissatcohen.com, and that's Marissa with one S. And on there you can find information about my research, my speaking engagements, as well as my book, which is called From First Kiss to Forever, A Scientific Approach to Love. And it basically takes a look at love from an academic perspective, going all the way from your earliest attachment relationships through finding a mate, through making a successful long-term and fulfilling relationship.
Well, that sounds fantastic. although most people don't think science has nothing to do with love and relationships. If they only knew, we actually do know what makes relationships work if people would just be interested in finding out.
Exactly, or at least we're chipping away to find out more and more as we go on.
So what I want you guys to understand today is that, as we've talked about, being honest isn't always easy, but as the old saying goes, it is always the best policy. It also can be done in a gentle and loving way. So many people suffer in silence and frequently pull the plug on their relationships because they don't know how to honestly express their thoughts and feelings. And if you want a truly intimate relationship, isn't it worth learning how? And hopefully you'll keep listening to the show for more wonderful information like today. And until next week, stay loving.